I intended to read a funny section from Goodnight Ladies, but I couldn't condense it into short enough length. So let's go now from the light and take a little walk in the dark. I'm going to read a story and then three poems. Two women with wine glasses. Down the hill on the road through woods, the fireflies glowed bigger than either of them had ever seen, casting a blue light a foot in radius and sizzling like sparklers. "There's one," they called out, "and there." They carried stemmed wine glasses from Anna's dining table where they downed a light curry and quite a bit of Pinot Grigio. It was dark under the trees. You could not see your feet beneath you. If vision had permitted, you might have noticed that the wider-hipped woman was still in the black clothes of Manhattan, while the slender woman sported skinny jeans and a long-sleeved shirt against mosquitoes. Anna had never brought a friend down here at night, nor come by herself, not even at dusk. It wasn't the decades past headlines from the town newspaper, "Meadow rapist drives a light blue van," or "Man shot dead intent on meadow." Excuse me, I've had the 4-week cold and it's coming back. No, it was the emptiness, the colossal absence that you can feel in this lowland, even by daylight. Into such an emptiness, it's wise to go accompanied by a God of kindly disposition. And Anna had no such deity left. Only an occasional curiosity about the nature of things. What, for instance, is the color of trees by night? The city woman, Judith, found people to be her proper landscape, preferred to take her walks on concrete, and seldom patted dogs. "Okay," she'd acquiesced after the curry at Anna's. It didn't really matter to her where she walked. What she wanted was a chance to talk to Anna, to enter into the sweet communion a long friendship provides. As they made their way downward toward a great meadow that had once been the bottom of a lake, Judith told Anna about her mother who was dying 1,500 miles away in Florida, and about how hard it was to supervise geriatric care at such a distance. Not to mention after a lifetime of not getting on too well with your mother. "Now she's paranoid," Judith cried in frustration. "Hates all the aides. They've stolen her brush, they've stolen her candies, they've taken her money." "How old is she now?" 87. "Older than mine," Anna said, meaning if not saying when she died. "Mine didn't get paranoid, just anxious. Well, maybe a little depressed at the end." "Mine's been depressed all her life. I tell myself, so what? You got stuck with a depressed mother? Big deal." As her guest spoke, Anna was surprised to find herself remembering her own mother, not as an exhausted 83-year-old, but as a young woman, her dark hair falling to the shoulders of an exquisitely pleated linen jacket. Finally, she said, "Do you love her?" "She's my mother," Judith answered. "I loved her once. You know what I mean?" "Yeah." And I hadn't gotten on so well with her mother either. Even so, when that small, white-haired shape under the sheets stopped breathing, Anna had felt the sky over the hospital empty itself. "But it's too hard to love her now," Judith said. "She hates everything I do, and she doesn't trust me any more than she trusts those aides of hers. They get like that." These two had known each other's parents, served as bridal attendants in each other's weddings, raised children together in an asphalt playground in the great city 200 miles to the south. This made them part of a clan. It made them part of a troop of hominids who traveled the grasslands and asphalt together, sharing their food and their stories, knowing and remembering each other's histories, shaping each other's sense of the world, providing human warmth when the world itself turned cold. I do want to be good to her, though, Judith explained. She's so helpless. Why can't she ever tell me I'm good? You are good. She's lost her marbles, that's all. They were nearing the lowest, swampiest part of the descent. On each side of the dirt road rose tree trunks and vines visible when the glow of a firefly lit up bits of the surrounding foliage with sudden, unlikely radiance. It's beautiful here, Judith said. Surprised, Anna confessed, I've never actually been down here at night. Isn't it safe? Oh, it's very safe. Just then, Anna was beginning to remember something learned long ago in human physiology, something about eyes, something about seeing in the dark, something about rods, cones. Yes, that was it. Color doesn't lie in the objects we see. It rests in our own eyes. And if color isn't real, is anything out there real? She kept on walking because that's what you do when you come upon the mystery of perception. If you stop too suddenly, you might fall over or to your knees. Gradually, the trees thinned, giving way to level ground and to a flat, moonlit meadow, no longer washed by the waters of a glacial lake. They were walking entirely in the open now. If there were gods up in the sky, they could easily have spotted these two figures against a dark ground, each carrying a wine glass. On they walked, managing the road by the feel of their shoes on loose dirt and in the slopes of hardened car ruts. Once in a while, a firefly bloomed, although not nearly so frequently as back under the trees. Far to the right, Anna could make out the mass of a mountain protruding into the night sky. A halo of orange shone over it, a halo coming from the lights of a modest city, where 60,000 people lived. Over there, a city. Over here, a lake bottom drained of its waters, and left as fertile soil to be visited by bands of humans coming off the glaciers long ago and getting the hang of seeds. Seeds! Anna was reminded of what she usually said when she brought visitors down here by the light of day. The Nonotuc were farming this field when the English came, she began, hoping to distract Judith from her worries about her mother. They planted their corn in circles, not in rows like the English. You can feel them sometimes, hear their voices, kind of. She paused. Of course she couldn't hear their voices. She knew that. It was just the buzz of insects, so all-encompassing, so untranslatable. You always like that Indian stuff. They didn't talk for a while. They could hear the sound of their shoes on the uneven road, striding. They were both striders. Their eyes followed the lights of cars mounting the highway's entry ramp in the distance. Their ears registered the shifting of truck gears on the exit ramp. Anna came to a standstill at the apex of the road that she knew would soon swing to the left. Straight in front of them, but way over and beyond the highway, another mountain mass became discernible. From its top, a tiny light shone out. Again, Anna tried to amuse her friend. This spot, right here, she said, it's my favorite. I like to think that here under our feet is where some woman of the Nanata came to stand on a hot night after a bad day grinding corn or washing moccasins or not finding any strawberries. She'd stand there and look out at that mountain in the cool of the evening and feel refreshed. That's kind of creepy, Judith said. When they turned leftward with the loop of the road, two shadows moved on the ground before them, and Judith cried out. It's just us, Anna said. It's just the moon, our shadows. She looked over her shoulder to make sure. The moon is behind us now. It's cast our shadows in front of us. Moving away from the meadow's openness, they reached the edge of the woods and soon found themselves under the trees again. Dark trunks against dark trunks, spaces where no moon could follow. Once more, they could not see their feet beneath them. Once more, the fireflies glowed to either side of the road. To bring her own familiar world closer, Judith spoke of her son. Did you see that PBS show in Alaska a couple of weeks ago? Eric worked on that one. No, well, yes, parts. I was channel surfing. I didn't know it was Eric's. Judith hurried on. He says that up there, there's places that are just snow and rocks and steam. That's all. A total absence of green. Nothing anywhere. His boss lost it. Totally lost it. She kept saying Alaska wasn't one of God's works. She had to go on tranquilizers. Anna stumbled, caught herself. Weren't there some bears in it? What I saw had some terrific bears in it. Lots of bears. Did you know that if a bear is pregnant and it's a drought year, she simply aborts the fertilized eggs? They flush right out of her. And when she gets old, she hibernates and never wakes up. No pain or anything. She just lies there dead until the den falls down on her. Very neat. No cleanup. If only my mother. As the two of them moved farther and farther under the thickening trees, the absence of kindly gods became palpable to Anna. Anything could be waiting there in the darkness beyond the edge of the road. Anything could be watching them. Bats, teenage drug dealers, Dracula. Deep in under the trees, she did begin to sense some presence observing her, observing the two of them. Over there, a distant glint, eyes. In the moist darkness, things flew about, the sound of wings pumping, twigs snapping. Next came strange beepings and gurglings, reminding her of those in her mother's intensive care room. Suddenly, Judith said, "Are you sure this is safe?" "Oh, yes, the houses are right up, just up to the left. We've been walking in a circle." "A circle?" Judith's voice broke with relief. "I'm sorry, I should have told you. I thought you knew. We're almost there, almost home." Anna got a little out of breath on the climb up. The darkness in among the trees had taken on such a quality of danger that her curiosity about the color of trees by night left her entirely. She didn't care to know one more thing about the world. She wanted so much to be a small child again, walking with her mother in a winter's snow, leaning against her, and her mother wearing the coat with the fur collar and the fur on the ends of the sleeves that came down over her beautiful hands.